the Award Podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 176, in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. We have got a great show planned for you this week, folks. Very good person. By the name of Andrew Jocelyn is going to be joining me here in the backyard shortly. He is basically the guy who writes all the string parts for every band that you've ever heard of. No. For a lot of them, okay? Let's see. What's on his like resume right now? Well, he wrote all the string parts and plays violin live in stadiums with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Wrote all those parts out too. Wrote all that music out for them. All the string parts anyway. Also, he did this great album with Mark Lanegan, former singer from the Screaming Trees. Man, this guy, Andrew, very, very busy man. We actually even had to, like, the day he came over here yesterday. Yesterday was Saturday. And he came, and we had to reschedule for an earlier time because he got called by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis to come and do record some new stuff, cuz they are recording some new music, and you've heard it here first, folks. So get ready for that, right? Yeah. But nonetheless, I had a fantastic conversation with Mr. Jocelyn. It was awesome. He was very enthusiastic, very nice, and willing to talk about, like, you know, starting with Ben and Ryan, kind of at the beginning of Macklemore, right? And how this is all, like, raised and blossomed and ballooned into this, you know, insanely popular thing, you know? And now they're, like, selling out arenas all around the world, man. And Andrew was along for the ride. So, yeah, he's got some great insight on all that stuff. So you want to stick around for the whole show. I've got a couple of things to talk with you about before we get started, though. Let's see. Had an interesting, interaction is the word I'm looking for, with a person on Facebook. I don't even know who this person is. I guess let's just get into it, right? Just get into it. I don't even know who this person is, but it's a lady from not the same state, somewhere here in the United States, and I don't know if she listens to the show or not. But she did, you know, she sent me a friend request, I don't know, like a year ago, maybe. And the only reason I remember is because she's got a very goofy, profile picture, and it hasn't changed. And I remember when it came across, like, this person has sent you a friend request. I remember that day, like it was yesterday. I just remember the profile pic. Anyway, she sends me an email or a digital message on Facebook the other day, and I'm going to read it to you here. It says, "Aaron, I think it's great that you have a podcast. More power to you. But do I constantly have to hear about it and see..." Maybe I should just read this and how she spelled it out. I'm going to do that. Let me start over. "Aaron, I think it's great that you have a podcast." Podcast is in all capital letters. "More power to you. But do I constantly have to hear about it and see you posts about what wonderful guests you have..." Wonderful is all caps. "Have on? No, Frankly, I find your posts annoying and braggy, and maybe that's why no one ever likes them, quote unquote. I am not trying to be mean or dismissive of your hobby. Okay, thanks. But maybe you should keep those on a separate Facebook page. And then she signs her name. I wrote her back, and, you know, I was trying to keep things civil. Like, normally, I would go into, like, hey, fuck you. You know, you don't have to, whatever. This is my personal Facebook page. You sent me a friend request. If you don't want to see the stuff that I post on there, then fuck, get out of here. Who cares? Sorry, I'm swearing here, people, but, you know, it's real. It's real. Right? I mean, come on. You can always just press unsubscribe or something like that, or unfriend me. I'm not, you know, it's not going to make me feel bad. But why do you have to send, like, this whole message saying that I'm annoying and braggy? I don't think they're real braggy. My posts about the podcast and about the new episodes and stuff like that, that's just weird, man. So anyway, this is what I wrote back to her. I am sorry you feel this way. I do not intentionally try to make my posts about the show braggy. Please understand that my podcast is also a part of how I make a living. In parentheses, not a large part, mind you. And in order to keep that up, I do have to promote it. I'm sorry, I'm not a famous person, so social media is really the only promotional tool I can use. I will be continuing to promote myself on my personal page. I am sorry if that annoys you. I will not be offended if you unfriend me. And then I wrote as like a little last dig, I wrote, may I ask why you sent me a friend request in the first place? And then I didn't wait around to get an answer. Maybe I should have, but I blocked her at that point. And then I took a screen cap of this whole interaction. And I posted it up there. And a lot of people responded to it in a very positive manner. Positive towards me, anyway. Because that is something that I think about from time to time. Like, okay, I'm posting another thing on here. Granted, they don't get a lot of likes on my personal page, right? Only when maybe we have a big name guest that a lot of people know about, they'll like that. But, you know, it's one way of promoting it. And I don't know if people get tired of seeing it or not. Because some of you, you like the Air Raid page on Facebook and you are friends with me, quote unquote friends with me on Facebook. So you get it doubled, right? You get the double dip. Basically, on Facebook posts. I'll be the first one to say it. I'm sorry. But I need to get this stuff out to a larger audience. I hope that doesn't annoy you or make you feel like I'm being braggy. But yeah. Hey, speaking of making a living doing a podcast, we've got a great sponsor. Oh yeah, you know them, you love them. Local boys. Naked City Brewery, they're on Greenwood Avenue. They have great beers, great food, great ambiance there at the brewery itself. So why don't you go and pay a visit to Naked City. Get a growler of some of your favorites. My favorite right now is their, I don't know, if like a Belgian, I think it's a Belgian ale, I want to say. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know much about beer, but I know that it's good, right? And my favorite right now is Duplicity. And boy, you know, be careful if you're having more than one glass of Duplicity, because that will get right on top of you, folks. Right on top of you. Excuse me. Having trouble here today. So go to their Facebook page and, you know, like them and then tell them that you heard about them from here, from the Air Raid podcast. And throw them some love. Throw some love their way. Tell your friends about them, too. Like I said, great food, too, man. Great burgers. They've got these little, like, steak bites. I don't know. I can't remember what they're called. But, man, you get those little steak bites as an appetizer. Woo! Hey, buddy. Good stuff, right? Yeah. Here in North Seattle, Naked City Brewery. It's a fantastic place. And you should definitely know about it. Let's see. Hey, Christmas is coming up. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all you folks listening out there. Be safe. I hope you enjoy your time with your families, your friends, you know, and your drinks. I know I'm going to have quite a few drinks. That's just what I do when I get around large amounts of family. So that's what I'm going to do, and I hope you do as well. And I hope you have a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be our first time hosting a family get-together at our new house here in Seattle, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. We're going to have a house full of family on Christmas Eve. It's going to be awesome. And hopefully I'll end up with some frickin' leftovers of turkey because I didn't get any at Thanksgiving. And that was BS. That was BS. So I'm going to like take half of the turkey and I'm going to hide it. I'm going to hide it somewhere so nobody can have it. Yeah. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to waking up on Christmas morning in our, you know, relatively new house. And my daughter is going to run over to the tree. She's getting so excited. She's getting so excited for Santa to come down the chimney, is what she says. And she's going to see all the presents under the tree, which is not going to be much. Actually, we're even going to be rewrapping some of her old toys. She's only 2.5. She's not going to know. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. And maybe she'll start playing with those things again. I don't know. But yeah, really, really looking forward to it. And I hope you guys are too. So have a safe and wonderful Christmas. And we'll see you guys on the other side of the holiday. And that's about it. Let's go with our first musical break here. We're going to be featuring songs that Andrew Jocelyn, our wonderful guest this week, has been associated with. And this first one, you probably know, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. The song is Neon Cathedral, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us with Andrew Jocelyn today. It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. Okay, we'll see you in a moment. Got a long way to swim. Closed the Bible a while ago. I need some shots for the sin. Hail Mary, come with me. Feel like Pac when it hits. Got some fire in my belly and a ride in the gut. Bush Mills for a Band-Aid. The sweet taste of blood. And I might actually feel something if I don't cover it up. Rusted faces, familiar places. Even if they haven't left the vinyl booth that they stay in. Motel next door, a sign that reads vacant. And a truth that's so strong, I'd be a fool not to chase it. But yet, I'm a fool and I stay here. Hope these problems drown themselves. I die and wait here. One more, four more, fuck it, a nightcap. Service starts at 5 tomorrow and I'll be right back. Underneath this fragile frame lives a battle between pride and shame. But I've misplaced that sense of pride. This crown of thorns is perched atop my spine. Listen closely as I testify. Read the Bible, but I forgot the verses. The liquor store is open later than the churches. Pure by the imperfections, everything that's burning. To hell with the confessions, all the Lord of mercies. Less than holy water, the scent of Holy Father. Have you ever smelled flesh that sweats out Monarch Vodka? 11 a.m. in the morning, and you can't get it off ya. Calling to the preacher, but it's like the pastor isn't talking. Until the store opens, I can re-up on that doctrine. The people close to me say that I'm in need of a doctor. Think that I got a problem, but these are not apostles. This is the drink of the Lord, that's according to my gospel. Open to interpretation, if you're judging, I don't want it. I got sins that scold like my throat when I hit the bottle and I'm sinking. And that's why I keep on drinking. I need a refill far more than once every weekend. Sweet Jesus, I'm getting amnesia. Shaking till I get a taste, my faith is having seizures. Every time I walk away and try to leave it. Every time I walk away and try to leave it. Wanna miss it, but the world baptized in my vices, and the bar is my church. Traded my artist, and I pawned off the easel. Spent it all searching for God at the Neon Cathedral. Wanna miss it, but the world baptized my vices, and the bar is my church. Traded my artist, and I pawned off the easel. Spent it all searching for God. That's why I put these up, because I just wanted to like impress all the musicians that could, because I'm not a professional musician. Like, I just put these up to impress the professional. Yeah, these are just plastic. They're just hollow. Just hollow shells. Andrew Jocelyn, welcome to the backyard, sir.
I am so happy to be here. Thanks for having
yeah.
me.
Yeah. It was a bit... This is like... I normally don't do shows so early, but it's kind of nice.
Yeah. It's kind of that
I like it.
Peaceful,
it's like, you know,
morning.
Beginning of the day. This is how you're going to start your day with a really good conversation.
Yeah.
You
I
know?
Like that.
Yeah. Right.
You know, over a cup of Joe.
Over a cup of Joe with some Baileys in it.
Yeah. Why not?
You know? Yeah, get a little loopy. You've got a very busy day today, though, sir.
Yes, you're absolutely.
Gonna, yeah, yeah.
I got this, and then right after I run over to Studio X doing a full orchestral session with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis for some new tracking.
Some new tracks, huh?
New tracks.
Hey,
I think
buddy.
they're tired of, you know, thrift shop and everything else. And then shortly thereafter, have to run to Showbox Market and doing a show with my string quartet. At the Showbox Market with Ivan and Alyosha.
Oh, that's tonight.
Yes.
I love those guys.
So.
You're playing with them.
Yeah.
That's awesome. They're great. They've been on this show before, too.
I've been bugging Tim and Pete and those guys for a while. Like, I want to do an album with them. I love their sound. They just, their vocal harmonies are so clean.
They're very good.
God,
yeah.
It's
amazing. And they've been really making a name for themselves recently as well. Doing some good things.
Signed to Dualtone, Nashville.
Yep.
And same label as Lumineers, and just killing it.
Yeah.
Doing great. They
totally.
You know. Yeah.
Do you feel like Seattle is like coming back onto? I don't know. For lack of a better term, the music
map.
Scene. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God.
Are we like regaining? Are we retaking the throne?
I hope so.
For musical cities.
I hope so.
I mean, there's quite a few. I mean, New York. Austin, or,
yeah, like
you know,
New York, Austin, Nashville for like recording.
Right,
you got LA.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Seattle ever necessarily disappeared. I've always heard people joke that Seattle is like the hippier version of like Brooklyn when it comes to like indie music.
Right, right.
You know, because it's like we always have. I mean, we like Capitol Hill. It's like you walk out there and it's like. Every single indie band that you can think of that's just trying to get a name for themselves
right.
is just like infesting every street corner.
Yes.
And it's like, it's great.
I like that word, know? Infesting.
Infesting. I don't know. I was like trying to come up with something. I don't know.
Andrew Jocelyn. Asshole. musical asshole. No.
For your ear hole.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's so much good stuff happening in this city right now, like musically.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's, I don't know, it kind of seemed like it was really ramping up like a couple years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And things were kind of taken off for a lot of the kind of, you know, the smaller bands that everybody kind of knew around town.
Yeah, I like the fact that there's just, the thing that's, there's two things I really love about Seattle, and other musicians I know will support me on this, is number one, the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone's supporting each other. Like,
for
example, Chris Orlowski, his band's gear got robbed like last Christmas.
Right.
Everyone threw
God,
together a party. You know, you got like John Roderick, you got like Shelby Earle, you got all these people, Tommy Simmons, all these people just coming together in the scene and just being like, hey, let's raise some money.
Right.
And the community
right.
was fully behind it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the Fremont Abbey, they threw together like a Nico Case like tribute night. And it's like, the thing is, there's such cross-germination with different genres in Seattle that I really like.
Totally.
You got, like, Alan Stone. That's the funk soul, you know, king right now. And, you know, doing tracking with Macklemore.
Mm-hmm.
As
mm-hmm.
well as, like, Mary Lambert. But, I mean, like, those are, like, pretty obvious ones. But then you have, like, Tess Henley, you know, and Carson Henley with these kind of, like, very soul-driven areas, you know, doing... you know, joint shows with other artists. It's, I don't know, that's the thing I really love about Seattle is the community.
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
like how much people are like working together and just like, there's a lot of, I don't know. That's one thing for me. I feel blessed as a composer is I get to work with everybody.
Well, that's what I was going to say is like, you see this from a totally different perspective because
as
of right now too, like a lot of people are, and maybe we should go back and kind of explain what you do because we haven't done that yet, but, you're coming from a point where like everybody is clamoring to get string sections now
Yeah,
on
like
tracks,
strings, orchestras. It's funny,
and it doesn't matter what type of music either. It's like it's hip hop, it's rock, it's country, you know, it's indie pop. It, you know, everybody's like wanting that sound.
Yeah,
you know,
and I love that because when keeps food on the table. But it's funny for me, like it's such an emotional, like, I don't know, there's such a peak for me because I was always the orchestra kid looking in on the cool kids being like, I want to hang out with them after school. And I, like, honestly, like, I was, you know, I would be listening to Tchaikovsky and everything and Mendelssohn and, you know, and I love classical music and now it's all coming full circle. But, like, I was always the kid doing, like, my Bach, you know, preludes and, you know, just like practicing and then being like, man, I'm going to listen to Sting's Nothing Like the Sun or War with, you know, U2. And like, mm-hmm. I would be like, I want to play in a band like this, you know, and it didn't happen until like college. I never, I wrote it off as like, I play violin and viola. It's never going to happen. That life is not for me.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden being like, well, I just got to play, you know, with Macklemore at Madison Square Garden, or I got to do this with Mark Lanegan, or I just did a show with Duff McKagan. It's like my brain has been exploded so many times in the past year. I'm just like, I don't like, it's like the inner, you know, orchestra geek in me is just like, I can't believe they haven't realized that I'm not cool. Like,
that's hilarious. That's a really good I wanted your perspective on that because because you know, in elementary school, like, how long have you been playing violin and viola?
So I started violin when I was 5.
Was it something that your parents like pushed you into? Like,
It was a mutual push.
Okay.
But yes, definitely.
Had to learn a musical instrument.
Yeah, the push off the cliff was my parents for sure.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And for them, they wanted to pass on the family legacy. My dad's side of the family has a lot of strong classical musicians.
Oh, really?
My step grandfather started the London String Quartet. My grandmother.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's like my grandmother was.
So it's in your blood.
Yeah, which is great. I think that was also a lot of pressure, honestly.
Okay. Because
it's like my great aunt was an amazing violinist. And my grandmother was an amazing cellist, and they're all like heavily invested in like the 20s and 30s in like Hollywood doing soundtracks and working with Rosinski and Fritz Kreisler and the like William Primrose, these amazing classical musicians.
Okay.
Like the top of the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
Like they were like the Itzhak Perlmans of back in the day. And
you just made a reference that I have no.
It's okay.
No idea.
The other orchestra nerds will be like, oh my God. but like, so for me, it was like, oh God, I don't know if I can live up to this. And
yeah,
I always kind of felt, I was always that weird orchestra kid that didn't even quite fit in orchestra. Like I would be, you know, not quite playing what was put in front of me. I'd be like, well, I think this chord is cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, you know, and it's like some weird jazz chord or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will be like, well, I don't know if you quite fit here. And then I didn't quite fit in the rock crew because I played violin. So it was like, I always was like, man, I don't fit anywhere. So like, yeah, but like my whole past was playing classical music. I started to get even weirder, I started playing like fiddle music for a while.
Okay, so like
bluegrass, Scots Irish, Cajun fiddling, like,
yeah, yeah,
you know. And my mom's side of the family, she's crazy Hungarian, you know. So she like came over in like the 50s, and there's all that like gypsy blood in there. So like it's this kind of like ongoing joke. It's like, well, you know, it's like that crazy kind of gypsy-ishness that like kind of drove me away from classical music, you know, or whatever.
So tell me about this, because this is always, I mean, this is, you know, a lot of it is just what you see in movies. It's a cliche, but like the kids that are studying classical music, that play classical instruments when, you know, from a very young age, usually steeped in that music, they're not usually allowed to like listen to anything else, right?
Yeah,
is that kind of the case?
I think so. I mean, that's such a gross overgeneralization.
It's definitely a stereotype.
Absolutely. I mean, you got kids that are like, you are going to be bred to be in Juilliard,
yes.
so you cannot listen to your Beatles mixtape.
Did you know kids like that? Is that why you were kind of like
a little bit
the odd kid out?
I did, because I did. You know, when you're steeped in like the classical studies, you're doing master classes and recitals and. I did like an orchestra camp.
I did
in like Vermont. Like I flew out there and the thing that was crazy is the vast majority of those kids were like Juilliard Conservatory.
Okay.
Like they were,
they had a track.
They were ready to go. We're going to go to Oberlin. We're going to go here. We're going to do this, or we're going to go over to Europe and study like at the Vienna Conservatory. And it's just like, I was the one kid that was like, well, you know, I've been listening to Sting and U2 and Tears for Fears, and these are the bands I like, and like Eminem had just come out then, and I was just like, oh, dude, this is really cool, and they're just like, they had nothing in common. There was no
musical
common ground, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I had the one thing that was interesting is I always had a for rock musicians and other musicians, this might seem strange, but a lot of classical musicians can't improvise at all. They are strictly
right.
Like they're mechanical jukeboxes. Amazing, technically proficient jukeboxes.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
when you're like, hey, create something on the spot, they're like, I can't help you.
Yeah. Right.
So, but I was kind of the weird kid because I was always like, I just want to play something by myself, and I'll just start like making up some weird tune, or I'll start like, you know, plucking around on the violin, and that mentality and that fascination of just creating something out of nothing, like that's what kind of drove me into where I am now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
I can see that.
So
I experienced that, you know, like I had a lot of, music major friends when I went to college, and I played in bands over there and stuff.
Yeah.
And we would always get, string players to come and play with us, cello and viola and violin. And it was always so much fun because it would just fill everything out, you know. It sounds so amazing.
Totally.
But yeah, you had to, you know, they weren't capable of just kind of writing something on their own. Like our bass player was really great. He played double bass for the symphony.
Excellent.
So he knew how to notate. Yes, everything. And he, so he would write everything out and do the same thing probably you do on a daily basis. To a lesser extent, of course, but okay. but you know, and he would write everything out, and then they would go off of that. But yeah, it was really interesting to see that, you know, these people that I held in very high regard as being like musical genius.
Yeah,
like you know?
they're doing their scales every
right,
single day. Their
right,
arpeggios.
Like,
they're
that's
doing
something
weird
I cannot do. Like I cannot do. I do not have the mind for that stuff. Like I have to. I don't even know chords. Like you tell me to play like an A minor, and I'm like,
all right, time to get the tab book out.
Hold on, this is gonna take a couple minutes. I know I'll find it. It's gonna take a couple minutes. But like I never learned that way, you know. And it was it was so interesting to see how, you know, those two schools kind of work together.
Yeah, and I think that's the weird. I think for the longest time I saw the discrepancy there, and I was just like, I don't understand why it can't work and why it can't be more natural, because it's a lot of bands are like, I would love an orchestra, but I don't know how to talk to the orchestra kids. I don't know how to make it work.
Vice versa.
There's a lot of orchestra kids. It's like, I'm sick of playing Hindemith. I want to play, you know, I want to rock out to Queen or something else. And it's like they're, you know, it's weird that, you know, with music, it's such the universal language.
Oh yeah.
But then all of a sudden there's this weird little like disconnect right there. Just like how you communicate it that like people can't, you know, so it's this weird, that little conduit is the weird little fringe classical bizarre world that I live in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love it, you know, because it's like I can talk to the orchestra nerds and geek out on like, oh man, so I just modulated so hard on that, and they're like, oh my god, or you know, and then all of a sudden go to the, you know, the rock,
that sounds dirty.
It sounds way too dirty. I'm sorry, this is a PG-13 show, dropping awesome bombs in your ear holes. So, and then vice versa, geeking out with the rock kids and being like, oh man, that sounded so much like Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and it's, I love it because there's satisfaction on both ends. I get to herald in all these other kids into their dreams like I get to do, and then vice versa, get to realize a bigger potential dream for the rockers and the hip hoppers. And like,
I love that.
You know, it's so, that's the, this crazy, I love it. That's, like I said, it's just this weird little world that I've got to occupy now.
That's really cool, man.
So
did, I mean, because you're saying that you went to like all these like symphony camps and things like that. Like, as a kid, even, you know, though you're realizing like you don't really, you feel like you don't really fit in with, you know, either group. You don't know where you're going with music and stuff, but is this still like a point where your parents are kind of pushing you into doing this kind of stuff? Because that sounds like something more of like a parent would be like, okay, well, there's this camp that we want you to go to.
The best thing, my parents were amazing with this. Like, they're just like, you know, do what you want to do with music. The main thing is they just wanted me to keep on playing the violin no matter what. I did. They're just like, we just want you to play violin through high school.
They wanted to keep up the family tradition. It was more of a tradition thing.
Like, to a degree, I think at the beginning that was like the catalyst. But then at the end, I think it was, they're just like, we just want to give you a good education. Bottom line. You know, if you stop playing violin after you graduate high school, that's fine. But you can't come back to us and say we didn't give you a good education.
Okay.
And I respect that. And I was just like, you know what? Because there wasn't ever like a feeling of like, whoosh, you got to do this. Or you have to get into Juilliard. You have to do this. Like, that was the disconnect I had with some other orchestra kids that were just like, their parents were just like, you cannot fail at this.
Like I said earlier, a lot of kids in that you know, that music world, or classical music world, are on a track,
right?
Like, they have it. So it's just like a kid in, you know, high school Texas, that is on a fast track to be a football player. Like,
absolutely,
that's their lot in life.
Thankfully, my parents didn't want to live vicariously through me that way.
So
I, you know, bless them for that. But like, I just didn't, it was weird because I saw all these kids in that world and I couldn't connect with it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it and it severely bothered me. All right. More coffee.
Yeah, exactly. You want me to strike that from the record?
It's okay. More awesome bombs.
Oh man. So I've got so many questions. Like, where did you go from there? Like, once you get to college age, where do you go to college?
So I went to college at Western Washington University.
Okay.
Yep. I stayed in state.
Gotcha.
I went there for two reasons. It was close but not too close to my parents.
Yes.
Number one. Number two, they had an awesome violin professor, this guy named Walter Schwede. I just fell in love with him. He was just
You realize you're drinking coffee out of a CWU mug, right?
Oh, no. All right. Sorry, Western alum. I'm really screwing
this up.
So, but yeah, had an amazing violin professor. And so I went there. I started off with the whole intention of being a music graduate, full-on bachelor's, and just fully focused on a classical degree. And it just started getting more and more like, man, you know, I want to learn about the industry. I want to learn about publishing, management. Like, how do I, like, actually make a career in music lucrative as opposed to studying Western, you know, influences of music and, you know, the Eastern world? Or, like, these they're great classes, but there was a certain point I was just like, I don't think I can make this happen.
Yeah.
I'm
and
not
no,
off- yet.
No offense to the people that I'm about to offend, but it's kind of like getting a degree in philosophy.
Right.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, and there's a time and a place for those degrees. But the thing is, it's like, I just wanted something more, and the schooling didn't quite offer what I wanted. So I kind of freaked out, like dropped it to a minor. But I didn't want to stop playing music. It was just like, I don't know what to do. I'm in this weird, like, you know, and there's such a, so many people are like, music is not a plan A, it's a plan B, you know, you don't, or no, you're, it's never, yeah, it's, you always need a plan B if you're going to choose music.
Okay.
Like, it's way too risky and you always need a fallback because
right.
most musicians aren't going to make it.
Yeah.
Most artists, period.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was just like, oh my God, what do? I need a job. I need to figure out my life. But to kind of put that off, I joined a rock band. I met a guy named David John. We started a band, started rocking out. It was like a Flogging Molly / Dave Matthews samples, John Butler trio rock group. And
college rock.
College rock, straight up. And it was so much fun. We toured a lot.
Yeah.
And did it for like 10 years. And like,
what was that band called?
It was called Handful of Lovin'.
Handful of Lovin', I know. Yeah, totally.
So I just,
you guys
like,
played all over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah.
And I had the electric violin, got all the guitar effects, had the loops, the delays, the wah. Like, I just went nuts. And I was like, I lived out my rock dream, and
yeah,
it
yeah.
was so fun. Like, I just, and that was the thing, is all of a sudden, like, that right there heralded me into the, like, that was the first step. Like, because all of a sudden people would see me play live and they're like, wow, you're actually like a good string player. Like, because other people would bring like fiddle players that didn't have the classical chops into studios.
Right.
And they'd
right,
be like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it would be too sloppy or wouldn't be on point. So I started getting a lot of studio session gigs. Just
like people just hearing about like.
Right. They'd just be like, dude, there's this crazy violinist.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we got a country Christian rock, you know, heavy metal album, blank, 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 whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, come
yeah.
in and just do session work. And then so, like, slowly just started doing a lot of session work. Like, early days, that's all I did. I just grinded in sessions.
Was it kind of in the back of your mind that, like, oh, like, I could do this?
No, not
this
at all.
It.
It's funny because I just was doing it just because I really enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really charge a lot at the time. I didn't think I would.
You didn't charge?
I was, but, like, not, like, you know, it was
you
just
didn't know what you didn't know what to do. You
no,
know,
I was just like, this is
much.
Awesome. I'm
right,
playing
right,
with a
yeah.
country rock band, or I just did this awesome hip hop album.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
was like, I was just so excited to be there.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, I will take every gig you guys can offer me. So like, I got to record it like Robert
now,
Lang,
are you,
Lenny
are
Bridge.
You are
know,
you
like,
still in? Are you still in college at this point, or this is like after college?
This is like slowly
okay.
crossing over.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I ended up with a music minor, music composition minor, and a English lit degree. yes, go figure. And so, and yeah, slowly, just like over time, though, in the session work, like I was saying beforehand, you know, a lot of classical players, they would have to be set in front of music to,
right,
you know,
right,
to do
yeah.
that. But all of a sudden, a lot of the rockers and people I worked with in studio would be like, I was improvising the entire thing without sheet music.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like,
yeah.
well,
because they don't necessarily know theory and
no,
how to
exactly.
write out and
so they're like,
and,
well,
yeah.
could you, like, play a harmony to yourself? Or could you do, like, more, like, lines? So all of a sudden, like, in the course of, like, 2-3 hours, I had multi-tracked
oh,
a full
yeah.
symphony.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, and that right there was all of a sudden like, maybe I should study up more on my composition because this could be something.
Uh-huh.
I think that was, it was, I think one of the first times, there was two times that like really, like I saw a potential like spark.
Yeah.
Last album I did with Handful of Lovin', we were in the studio and I just multi-tracked a shit ton of strings and I was just like, I was just getting off on it. I was like, this is so crazy. This is like a crazy one Andrew symphony. This is so cool. And then I was in there like for 5 hours straight. Just
yeah, yeah.
recorded so many, like I was just geeking out on like, oh my God, I just had it. That's the coolest counterpoint melody ever. And so I was like, I found so much joy in that moment.
Right.
And I was
right.
like, I could do this for a living. Like if I can figure out a way to make this happen, I could do this for a living. And then the second time was, Chris Orlowski, who I graduated Western with him.
Oh, okay.
And I know
that, is
I
that
knew
where
him.
You guys met?
Yeah, we first. So he was doing his own thing, And like Handful of Lovin' and him were kind of like rivals. It was like the Sharks and the Jets kind of thing. Right. So I was like, ooh, Chris Orlowski. Who is this guy? And we started playing shows together. Like he would open up for us. We'd open up for him. And I just realized he was the coolest dude ever. And I was like, I just kind of want to kick it with you. I don't even know if we play music, but let's just kick it.
Yeah,
and then
he's
like one of my best friends now. So like he came to me with an idea like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. He's like, what do you think about writing string quartets for me? Like, let's do a little mini album. You write a couple of string quartets and I play acoustic guitar. And I never thought about it. Uh-huh. And I was like, game on. I accept your challenge.
Yeah.
And I did. And I wrote, like, I went down, like plucked down in front of manuscript paper and just notated out like full string quartets. And then that was it. That was the start. All of a sudden everyone's like, wow, okay, we want to work with you. That was the number one
that was
step.
The impetus that was the impetus to where you're heading.
Yeah. And then like even before that, like working with Chris Orlowski, like in 2008 I was working with like Macklemore.
Mm-hmm.
But back then it was working with like him and Ryan in their basement, and just like I was just like, oh, this is cool. It's like it was just another one of those projects in the studios that I was running around in.
Right.
You know, I didn't think it was going to become the juggernaut it is now. So it's just funny because I was just so like happy to play with everybody. Like I would play with Macklemore. I worked with Jay Pinder, Soul, and like all these people, like kind of at the beginnings of their careers. And just because I was that one orchestra kid just geeking out and just happy to work with everybody.
Yeah. Well, you were in the right place at the right time. Like nobody
else
was doing what you were doing at that point, right?
Exactly. And that's
Very, very few. Few were.
Or as enthusiastically as me. Yeah. And like, because I was really ambitious. I print out really dumb business cards. Yeah. And I'm just like,
like the one you're holding right now?
Yeah. Well,
like mine?
This one's
that
awesome.
Was mine.
No, mine was worse than this. Believe me, it was terrible. It was like, on the bottom it said, strings that rock. Or to call this number for strings that rock.
Oh, God.
Like,
oh,
like,
God.
I was like, I think I walked up to Litho the studio a couple weeks ago, and it's like there hanging up on the bulletin board. I'm like, God, I need to get rid of those old cards, and it was just like, but that was it. I was so ready to take on anything.
That's great,
but,
man.
Yeah. And I mean like, yeah, absolutely. That Malcolm Gladwell kind of thing. I was at the right place at the right time, but I also had this huge skill set, like,
And a lot of experience, too, with working with that type of music,
like,
as well.
Yeah, like symphonic stuff all the way through college, then playing with a rock band, and just getting in that like mindset of just like, let's just grunge it out and sleep on some cat urine smelling, floor and just rock out in Eureka, California.
There you go.
Why not, And and there's lots of stories on the road for that. So,
well, let's do this. Let's go to our second musical break, and let's play something from Chris Orlowski, one that you worked on.
Yeah,
this is one of my favorite songs of his, All My People Go, or it's just All My People. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, Chris Orlowski featuring Mr. Andrew Jocelyn, our special guest today on the Air Raid Podcast. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Don't go anywhere.
Didn't even join the band. Traverse through fabled lands and make my mark. Starved confusion waves is one. A moment fed and won't move on to lead and fight. My people go, all my people go, when you live beyond the labels you have worn, all my people go. I
I'm not sure what Ben and Ryan plan for. So just to catch up, everybody, we're talking about Macklemore and future plans.
Yeah.
So I don't quite know what their intention is direction wise with like feature artists and stuff on the new album.
Uh-huh.
But I would imagine that they would probably like just go balls to the wall and just expand the palette as much as they can.
Yeah.
That's my 5 cents. But like, yeah, I mean like today just running down to Studio X and we're just going to be doing a full like symphonic thing. So
that's cool, man.
I think the thing that's just nice is something new, new music. Cause it's been like a year and a half of just
touring with the heist.
And
so yeah, that's a good question. Like, do you get tired of playing those songs?
Yeah. I think there's a level of, I don't know, it's interesting because it's like you have those artists that like have their one hits.
Right.
And
right.
They just are so tired of playing them over and over because it's like that's what everybody wants to hear.
Yeah. And there's only so far you can like, you know, improvise. You got to stay within a certain amount of guidelines.
Right.
Within there.
I remember seeing Harvey, like one of the first rock concerts I went to was I saw Harvey Danger
mm-hmm.
at Bumbershoot in like 98, I think.
Okay.
And everyone wanted to hear Flagpole Sitta. But they were like, hey guys, we got this new album. We're really excited about the new tunes and da da da. You should like check these out. No one was paying attention.
Right.
And then they played Flagpole at the end and they're like, ah. And
yeah.
Like,
everybody went crazy.
And I could tell Sean Nelson was just like, what the hell, you guys?
I've talked with Sean about that a couple times, and yeah, it's got to be kind of, yeah. And I mean, it's something on that scale too, like back in the 90s, that was like the high school anthem. It became the high school anthem.
Absolutely.
You know, every freaking movie about high school and, you know, I mean, Flagpole Sitta was in.
Yeah, you know? And it's like you get then like Can't Hold Us or like Thrift Shop.
Yeah.
And it's like the people just always want it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the Heist was overall was a very robust and full album. So the great thing is it's chock full of.
It's full of hits.
Yeah. There's a lot of great hits. So there's never like that moment in the set where there's a dip and people are just like, oh, I don't want to hear this song.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh man, this is just a crazy show. This is so great. So at least we can avoid that. But I mean, I don't know. Not to put it down, but it was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
The tour, like with that album and, you know, just with all the work that I did with them, it was just really, you know, it was such a weird emotional and mental payoff.
So let's go back a little bit. When did you start working with Ben and Ryan?
So I started working with Ben and Ryan in 08.
Where were they at in 08? Cause I have a peripheral knowledge of Macklemore. I mean, everybody in Seattle does now, obviously.
Absolutely. Well, so here's the weird little trajectory I took. at the time, I was still playing with Handful of Lovin'. We were rehearsing in our friend Eugene's house.
Okay.
Just because it was cheap rent and he had a nice little sound system we could use. And Eugene was into making hip-hop beats. And Eugene, back in the day, was a huge fan of Macklemore, like, with his first release, with Language of My World.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
and Eugene was, like, he gave money to Ben back then to, like, help him, like, release that album with Budo, yeah. And, like, he was just good friends. So there was that connection, and Eugene, at the time when I was rehearsing at his house, was like, "Hey, man, I want to make some hip-hop beats, and do you want to just, like, join in and just, like, do some stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, totally." And I was, you know, the kid that was just like, I will do anything.
Yeah,
I am so excited.
Yeah.
So we just started making hip hop beats together. And like, eventually we just had like a little collection of songs, and he sent that mixtape to Ben and was just like, "Hey Ben, like, check it out. I just want to see what you think." Ben was like, "You know, I don't know what I think, but I love the violinist. I want his number. I'll get in touch with him." And And at that time, Ben had gotten out of rehab, and he was just, he had nothing. He had no buzz, no, you know, he was just starting over.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to put together like a new era for himself. So he had called up Oor Runga, a trumpet player he knew from Garfield that he graduated with and knew way back when.
Uh-huh.
And he called me. So it was like me, Oor, and then he had this guy, DJ Omega Watts, spinning his beats from his first album.
Okay.
So first time I'd ever been to a hip-hop show, it was like I was playing with Macklemore, opening up for Blue Scholars and Raw Scion and Common Market at Numos.
Yeah.
For like a super Seattle hip-hop crew.
Right,
and
right.
Like Jake One was backstage, and like it was just this weird, like, I never thought I'd be here. And like my
kind of a weird place for a classically trained musician.
Absolutely.
To be,
yeah. It was very, I was the, you know, not like to be stereotypical, but I was definitely the whitest guy in the room. Like I was just like wearing a shirt and tie, and I was just hi guys, you know? And, but it was funny because like the bass player in Handful was like, he'd been immersed in like Slug and Atmosphere and Aesop Rock, and he's just dude, do you know how cool that is? And I was just like, I was like, oh my God, really? Oh my God, this is, you know, so it's like,
yeah. So you were hanging out with Jake One?
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, you.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the beginning.
Okay.
A couple months later, Ryan and Ben had met earlier, like before we'd met, and he was just like Ben's photographer. Slowly he got brought in as the producer,
and so you're still working with them like this whole time.
So I was just like working with them, just like, hey, we need strings, can you come in?
Sure.
Here I come.
Ba-da-da.
You know, and you know, if there was random shows with Ben, I would, you know, that we did a show at Seattle Central, we did this and stuff, and I mean, like, we just like we do random tours, you know, and just play wherever, you know. And It was great. It was just like, for me at the time, it was just like, man, it's just like, it's just a cool gig to be a part of.
I
was splitting time between like Handful, Chris Orlovsky, like that. And I was also playing with this guy named Dan Purser. And like, there was like I had like five or six bands I was like kind of juggling for a while. And
well, at any point, so what was the point where you kind of realized that this Macklemore Ryan Lewis thing was starting to take off? Because I remember like they had that song Wings that came out, right?
Yeah.
That got some national kind of press to it and stuff. And then
I think
maybe another song.
The one that. Yeah. So I did a lot of work on Wings. So like.
Okay.
Originally, Wings was a random like it, the there Ben had an acapella that he had from years ago.
Yeah.
Talking about consumerism and stuff. And he really, really wanted to create a beat, get a beat behind it. And it was a very kind of, it was a very long journey, Wings. So originally it was just you can look up on YouTube, like an old show we did in Bumbershoot.
Mm-hmm.
When it used to be called like Air Jordans or Nikes.
Right.
And
right.
I did a violin loop live.
Uh-huh.
And like I would just loop.
Just with a loop pedal?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
And, like, and that, and Ben like rapped over it. And that was the original, like that was the original first, like the first manifestation of Wings live.
Wow.
And and it's just weird because it just developed into this, you know, other entity.
Well, because I remember, like, I want to get your feeling on this too. I want to get like your thoughts on this, like, because Macklemore had kind of a big following. You guys had a big following here in Seattle.
Yeah.
For a while.
I mean, I think for Ben, to his credit, he had very loyal fans even after he went to rehab. And I think once they were like, oh my God, Macklemore's back, all his old fans from like his 2005 release were back on the train. Uh-huh. And it was pretty quick to get Seattle back on the map and loving him again. Yeah. And I think the moment that there was like, oh my God, I think there's something really crazy potential here. When we did My Oh My for Safeco, when we did the Dave Niehaus thing at Safeco Field, and it was down on the field, we were playing for 35,000 people, and it was nationally broadcasted. That was the moment I was like, this is there's something. I don't know quite what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't want to put any like labels on it or anything, but I was like, oh my God.
The song with Mary Lambert came out.
Yes. Same Love hadn't come out.
Same Love. Yeah.
Thrift Shop hadn't come out. Okay. Can't Hold Us hadn't come out. Wings, My Oh My, and oh God, Irish Celebration were kind of out. Okay. Like, we had already released this album called The Versus EP.
Mm-hmm.
So I had worked with them on that and the Versus EP, the remix. So those were the two that Ryan Lewis and Ben did together.
Gotcha.
And then once those came out and like we did My Oh My, it was just like, okay, this is turning
into a real thing.
Right. And that's when I was like, I need to start making choices.
Like what kind of choice? What do you mean?
It was a matter of time and dedication.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I need to be putting way more time into this. Yeah. And so there was just that thought process
Did you have to have that conversation with Ben and Ryan then?
There was a couple of conversations, you know. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, like, it was unfortunately too, like, I had to come to a really hard decision too, and like I parted ways with Handful.
Uh-huh.
Just like, hey, it was time that
those are awkward moments,
and it was difficult, and I think every rocker and every musician's had to deal with it. It's like when you're in a band, it's like you're married to three other dudes.
Totally, it's a very emotional connection, and especially if you've been playing for a long time.
Absolutely, and we had a very deep connection. It was just it was a very difficult moment.
Yeah,
and
ouch.
Yeah, so, and I think that was one of the first times I was like, okay, maybe I can actually be a musician, like a real musician. Like, I can have a career at it and actually make it lucrative. Yeah. So I actually around that time started doing post-grad work at Berklee School of Music.
Oh, really?
With their online program.
Okay.
And got a master's certificate in music business, composition for film and TV. Like, I just, that was my way of feeding my inner nerd, but like I finally felt like I was like learning the stuff that was necessary for me to feel like I knew what the hell I was doing.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes total sense.
So, and it was
that's
great.
That's a smart move too. Yeah.
No, and it felt I mean, I'm actually going back for one more certificate in January for getting like reharmonization arrangement for pop contemporary groups and like like advanced counterpoint, like just like really, cuz I want to, I don't know. I always feel like
in this business too, what you're doing, you have to constantly kind of reinvent and add to your repertoire.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. And I feel like if as an artist, you always need to be challenging yourself and you always, you get stagnant and you're just like, I'm there, I'm awesome, I'm the best there is. I don't think there's much fun to it anymore. Right, and I think you've actually become a lesser musician.
Yeah.
Because you're not challenging yourself. So
You're not evolving. You're not,
right. And that's the thing that I love is with the projects that I work with now, I love that there's this feeling of panic. I'll always have the beginning of working on a project. I'll be like, I don't know if I can do this. I really, really don't know if I can do this. I'll lose one night of sleep, like just sitting there all night mulling over it, being like, how am I going to, I don't know. I've never done this before. Like, I had that moment when I was first time I got to work with Mark Lanegan. I got hired to do, so like we were talking about beforehand, I got hired to work with him on a covers album, but we were doing classic covers like John Barry, Andy Williams, Nina Simone, Frank Sinatra, like the classic classics.
Right, right.
And I was hired.
Such a good album too.
And I was hired to come in and do all the orchestral stuff, like strings, woodwinds, horns.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I freaked out. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I have to go back and... Like, I had to listen to the Andy Williams version of Autumn Leaves and then have my own take on it. And I was like, I don't know.
So this was like a source of anxiety for you.
Absolutely.
Like, and that seems, that's got to seem strange. It seems strange to me, but I get it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you, for everybody else, like from the outside looking in, you are playing at this point when you get asked to do this for Mark Lanegan, you are on tour.
Yep.
With Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, probably
at that time I wasn't, thankfully.
Well, no, not on tour. Like, but you've been on tour for The Heist. The Heist was out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and like getting national. Like, I mean, you guys were selling out big, giant stadiums.
Yeah. So like
at this point.
When The Heist had been released, I did their West Coast tour, October 2012 to like mid November, and then I jumped off of it because then. I had to support the album I released with Chris.
Oh yeah,
and then we went on tour. So
I jumped off one tour. Oh my god!
I had overbooked myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was stressed, and my girlfriend was a little annoyed at me. And
holy shit!
It was so during that time I was like, you know, just swimming in music, and I was just like, oh my god, what am I doing?
Yeah. But it's got it. I mean, it seems strange for like to hear like, okay, well, you're on this like national tour, right? You're playing with somebody like Macklemore, who's, you know, national attention. Everybody knows that name now at this point. And then you get asked by Mark Lanegan to compose, and you freak out because you're like, oh my god, it's Mark Lanegan.
Yeah. I mean,
but you're playing with a Grammy-nominated hip-hop artist.
Now I am. Back then, I was just like, you know, it was still like, I'm a part of this cool project with Ben and Ryan. You know?
Right, right. Like, well, that's where I was going is like, you know these two guys.
Yeah, totally.
And all of a sudden, like this, you know, rock icon, Mark Lanegan, for those who don't know, lead singer of the Screaming Trees and then went off to do his
Queens of the Stone Age and Gutter Twins. Yeah,
right.
But then there's like, okay, so that was one moment. Another moment that was even more starstruck, I got to work with David Bazan of Pedro the Lion. And I like, oh my God, like I freaked out.
He is such a great guy though. He's so nice.
So nice. Yeah, like I just, every time I see him, I want to give him a hug. Like, you know, so we did a show together.
I'm just realizing right now that you've played with every musician that I've ever had on this show. Like...
Give me the list. I'll point out
that one. Yeah.
But yeah, like David Bazan, we did a show together in July of 2012 before The Heist was released. And I just like my string quartet that I run, like we backed a show. I did all the arrangements for him. And it was just one of those moments. It was like a my oh my moment at Safeco. It was like one of those moments. I was like, oh my God, I could do this the rest of my life.
Right.
And, you know, and we've actually he just did a show at Neptune for Barzook's 15th anniversary, and my quartet backed him. Like I had to.
Were you there for that?
I was really pissed. I was playing in Boston with Macklemore, which is, I mean, it's okay. It's a toss up, but my heart was breaking because I really, oh my God. So this is just a music fan geeking out like moment. So the song Priests and Paramedics that David Bazan does is just, it's just one of those sublime, like heartbreak songs. I just, oh my God. So I wrote this arrangement for it. And I just wanted to hear it live so bad. And I didn't get to, and I was just like, ah, but thankfully, and I think it's okay for me to say this on air, but I think we're doing a full album together.
Oh really?
So,
oh, that'll be fantastic.
I'm just really excited.
Sweet.
So there's
Sweet.
That. It's so weird where I'm at now because I'm, you know, I have an opportunity to work with Doug Marsh with Built to Spill,
They're coming to town here this week, next week?
Yeah, soon. Like yeah. And but like they're working on new material and they wanted some orchestral stuff. So I'm I don't know if that's guaranteed or not, but just the opportunity to work is just like Jesus. Yes. And
that's amazing.
Walking Papers, but like Barrett Martin and Duff McKagan. Uh-huh, like I'm gonna be working on some stuff for them.
Are they still here in Seattle or are they more LA now?
I think they're Seattle because I mean like Barrett Martin's here and Duff's still here so yeah, like yeah. I think so okay. And then okay. Another one is like Judy Collins. Like we have my quartet's got a string of dates with her end of January. We're like going on tour with her.
That's so amazing.
It's
so I mean do you ever have to kind of step back and go holy smokes, like this has become what I do. Or is it just like, and this is a question that I ask everybody that comes in here.
So it's the funny thing is, I'd been fighting so hard not being a full-time musician, mm-hmm. strangely enough. Like I had worked, when I was touring with Handful, I worked at Getty Images. Like I had a day job.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like touring, I had PTO. yeah. So it was safe. And I always had like the fallback. And it was not super risky. It was like, okay, all right, this is okay. Yeah. I can go and kick it with my friends for a couple of weeks. Yay. But I still have money.
uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And you can work from the road. With
right.
It, with
exactly.
Like that, yeah.
And then, you know, and I had other temp jobs and I was like, I never fully committed, you know, mm-hmm. it was like, you know, and after Berkeley, I actually got a job at a record label in town with Votive.
Oh, yeah.
So and they're like right next to Tooth and Nail up on Queen Anne.
Yeah.
And worked with them for a while and became like their A&R manager. And it was like a dream come true job.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, I'm a lifer. I'm going to be here forever. And then all of a sudden, like, I was getting a lot of work as an arranger and composer and doing film scores. And it was like, oh God. I have to make a choice. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And people there were like, sorry, man. It's obvious to us. Maybe it might not be obvious to you, but something needs to give.
They gave you the final push.
They did.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, it's
really a sign of a great place to work, too.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And that was a really hard moment, but then it was like I was plunging off the cliff, like being mm-hmm. pushed, and I was like, you know what? I have to do it.
Yeah.
I have to do it. And that was the moment I realized. And it's funny because like literally a week after that happened, Zach Quillen, Macklemore's manager, called and was like, hey, we're going on a 3-month tour. We're going to Europe.
Yeah.
We're going to full US. Are you in? Okay. Yeah, totally. And it's like, okay. So then for the next 3 months, I didn't have to really think about music full time.
Yeah.
Like, because I could kind of skate by and I had day sheets and catering and I could just like swim around in this weird arena touring bubble.
Right, right.
And it was like totally unreal and just be like,
now,
hey.
Was that ever pretty nerve wracking, like getting up in front of like sold out arenas?
At the beginning, it was, absolutely. But then.
And now it's just second nature. It's just your job.
Yeah, and that was the thing that was really weird. I don't know when it switched. Mm-hmm. It was like at one point, it was just like, well, the weirdest thing was, okay, after playing like the TD Garden in Boston,
yeah,
like fully sold out, crazy crowd.
How many people is that? 30,000?
I don't think it was that much. I don't know. I can't remember the capacity. It's a big place.
Yeah, definitely
bigger than Key Arena. And so there was that, and then also Staples Center in LA.
Oh yeah.
So oh my God, we play these huge places. Crazy crowds, and then coming back to Key Arena, you know, Key Arena's always been like, oh my God, I saw Hoobastank and Incubus here,
right?
And
right,
oh my God, like Death Cab is always playing here, and uh-huh. you've seen those huge shows, and you're just like, I'm always in the like nosebleed section, you know, and like being like, oh my God, this is so cool, and then playing on that stage for that audience, I was like, wow, Key Arena's small, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, who the
Who the fuck have I become?
What is this? Who are you? Slap yourself.
That's fantastic.
And I was just so like, funny. No. And I was like, this is really messed up.
I'm glad you realized that, though. You're still a human.
Well, I was like, I became a douchebag straight up. I need a reality check stat. So the great thing.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I think a favorite moment for me is, so my girlfriend's a musician as well.
Uh-huh.
She plays piano. She has this amazing voice. She's got like a Missy Higgins, Regina Spektor
vibe. Yeah.
So literally right after playing the last night of Key Arena, sold out three shows. And it was like the journey had reached its summit. Yeah. It was like the 80s montage ending. Like everyone's like running around, and like all of a sudden you jump up in the air and it's freeze frame.
It's freeze frame.
And it's like
an 80s movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like I just made it. And so that's what it felt like.
Yeah,
and then the next day drove to Yakima, played a super small place with my girlfriend. And it was like for 15 people, and it was super relaxed and intimate. And it was so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? This is where it's about, you know, like, because that's the roots. That's where I started with Ben and Ryan and with Handful.
Yeah, yeah.
And every artist starts there. And it was so great to have that experience. I was like, you know what? Thank God for this. This is exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I don't think Ben will have many opportunities like that because he's so big now.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, great. Perfect. This is
it's
what I needed. So it's, you know, I'm honestly still processing all of this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And I mean, like I was saying, so
what is it? It's been what, 2 weeks now since you guys played that last show?
So
that was to close out the national tour.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right.
And which is awesome. And it's, I think now it's like, I'm now coming to terms with, okay, I got to make this a business.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to be practical about it. So I got to start a business. I got to yada, yada, yada. Make it real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And which, ugh, you know, and like as a creative, having to figure out how to do taxes and start an LLC.
I'm going through that same thing right now, and I'm not looking forward to
maybe
it.
Maybe I should get a manager or an attorney.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, I've become that guy. But it's really exciting.
Yeah.
And it's great because it means it's really happening. So, so that's where I'm at. And it's, you know, I mean, it's this weird, like little, like, you know, I think the great thing is the holidays are coming, so I can kind of put off a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's least, working right now.
Yeah.
You don't have to either.
So I'll be like, I'm going to go kick it on Bainbridge and Yakima, you know, and just like, you know, just hang out and have stocking stuffers.
That's
and
great,
lots
man.
And lots of ice cream.
That's great.
And,
well,
you know,
if you want to go have a drink while we're both over on that side of the water,
yes,
you give me a ring.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
I'm there.
We'll go.
There's docks, the marina.
Yeah,
there's the pub.
Yeah, the pub is great.
The pub is awesome.
I love that place.
If you guys are ever on Bainbridge,
we'll go play some. Go play some blackjack at the Clearwater.
Yes. Yeah, all my high school friends, we always went to the casino.
Oh, hell yeah. You remember when it just used to be tents?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That place was gross.
I never went there during that time. My parents didn't let me.
No, of course not. Because they were good people. Yeah. Yeah.
They had morals.
That's right.
Standards.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Andrew Jocelyn, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much
talking
for having me, Aaron.
You.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And hopefully we can do it again sometime in the future. We're going to go out today with another. Well, let's go out with the Mark Lanegan stuff that you worked on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What's coming up for you, I guess, in the near future?
Besides
doing more recording
and
stuff like that, you got any shows coming up?
Yes, there's a couple of things. January 11th, flying down to L.A., playing the Tonight Show with Mary Lambert.
Jesus!
With my quartet. The end of January, doing a tour with Judy Collins.
Uh-huh.
Mid-February, my quartet is... I got a whole weekend at Doe Bay.
Cool.
So we're playing with, like, OK Sweetheart and another band to be announced.
Oh, I love her.
Aaron's so great. And so we have that. March, going back on tour for a little bit. But in the for the immediate future... working on my own stuff.
Cool, cool.
Working with other artists. I really want to get focused on co-writing, making, you know, really, really get out there. And then, Yeah, my gosh, what else there is? Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, and you can find out more about what Andrew is doing at his very nice website.
Thank you.
At andrewjocelynmusic.com. And we'll link that on our website, air-raid.net. And you can just follow that link. You got a Twitter account or anything that you...
Anything else you want to plug in? I am fully social media integrated. My Twitter is Jocelyn, J-O-S-L-Y-N, music. So it's at Jocelyn Music. My Instagram is AndrewJocelyn82.
And you've got some backstage shots on that.
Oh, yeah,
Instagram
if you
page.
If you want behind the
go
scenes.
Go and check that out. Yeah,
Shizzy, Nizzy, go to my Instagram. I am...
You're really learning the... You're really picking up the hip-hop lingo, I can tell.
Shizzy, Nizzy, Yo Drizzle. See, that's the super white boy. That's why.
You know what? You just
they
went
never
down,
gave me a
you just went down like three notches in the professional artist cred.
Every there's a couple of hip hop artists that are like, I'm never working
well,
with
we
that
were,
guy.
Scratch him off the list. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Well, you can find out more about us at air-raid.net at our website. You can also follow me on Twitter at airraidnet. We urge you guys to go and check out the website, go to the archives page and listen to other shows, other musicians that Andrew has played with, such as, maybe John Roderick.
Not yet.
Probably.
Like Chris Orlowski.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweetheart.
David Bazan. Macklemore is on there. Yeah. Macklemore himself is in the archives. You can also, hear stuff with, some great comedians. Bob Saget, man. Mm. I mean, that guy, he's gross. Let me tell you.
I'm going to actually go back to the archives on my drive back.
Check it out.
Listen to Bob Saget.
That's a good one. That sounds
like a good way to, you know,
guys like Pete Holmes, Dana Gould, all sorts of stuff there on the archives page for you guys to check out. So we really appreciate that. Have a great Christmas, everyone. That's Christmas coming up, right? It's this week.
Yep.
Right?
Merry Christmas.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
Any crazy plans for you?
No, just going over to the other side. Take it easy. That's what's great about having your family still live, you know, close to the city.
Yeah.
Because you can get out of the city. You don't have to deal with anything here.
And Kitsap County just feels like a different kingdom.
Yeah, it is.
It's like
it totally
crossed
is.
Into
Time
fairyland.
Time slows down over there, and I love it.
Except the drivers are really slow, too.
Yes, that's for sure. That is for sure. That is, that's totally right. I agree 100% with that.
A Californian driver at heart. I'm a terrible driver. My girlfriend is terrified of my driving.
I'm sure she is.
So if you see a blue Corolla screaming down the highway, you can find my number and call me and tell me to slow the hell down.
Thank you so much again. Have a great Christmas holiday, everybody. Happy holidays to you if you don't celebrate Christmas. Be safe, but be drunk. Okay, that's it. We're going to go out today with Mark Lanegan. I'm not the kind, and we'll
I'm
see
not
you
the
guys.
Loving kind.
I'm not the loving kind. Oh, I left a word out there. I'm not the loving kind. Featuring our guest today, Andrew Jocelyn. And make sure to tune in next week for Shayna from the band La Luz. She's going to tell us about that now infamous accident that they got into.
Yeah,
on the road, which was awful.
See, and another example of the Seattle community coming together. I told you, Seattle
totally,
community.
Yeah, it rocks, man. Ugh. It rocks.
Love you, Seattle.
Definitely. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Send no flowers or words of regret, 'cause I'm not the lover. Day by day I was hoping you'd be the kind of love that would give me peace of mind, but it may just have passed me by, 'cause I'm not the